Welcome to the Hadavar Messianic Ministries audio presentation of the devotional study series entitled The First Regathering, Modern Israel. In this portion of our study, Hadavar Messianic Ministries director, Pastor Bob Morris, will continue tracing important events in the history of the modern state of Israel. In this lesson, Pastor Bob will continue his explanation of the significant occurrences that transpired during the year 2000 and move on to the important events of the year 2001. Following the teaching session, you'll be given information explaining how to contact Hadavar Messianic Ministries with your questions and to order additional resources. Now let's begin lesson number 17. Here's Pastor Bob Morris.
At this point in our class, we begin lesson number 17 of the First Regathering, Modern Israel, a look at the all the activity of God as he brought the modern state of Israel into existence and then has maintained the state for some 50-some years. We're in the middle of the year 2000, or actually I should say we're moving toward the end of the year 2000, looking at the major events of that year. And we just finished up looking at the beginning of the Al-Aqsa Intifada and the youthful face of the Intifada, how it is, how the average suicide bomber is very young and being trained at a very young age to hate Israelis and Israel. Well, let's move on to the next topic I'd like to cover. The Intifada began in September. It's in November 2000 that Israel targets terrorists. In November of the year 2000, Israeli helicopter gunships successfully attacked Hussein Abayat. He was a senior leader of the Tanzim militia that has spearheaded the current Intifada. So he was assassinated by Israel. His death was the first. This is the first assassination of a senior member of Fatah, which is Arafat's political organization. Hussein al-Sheikh, one of the leaders of the movement, stated, "We in Fatah consider ourselves to be at a state of war with Israel." And the U.S. Has consistently condemned Israel's targeting of terrorists and condemned this particular assassination as well. Lieutenant General Shaul Mofaz defended the policy. He defended the policy in July of 2001, for example, by stating, "What would you do if 40 suicide attacks were carried out against your country?" In November 12th, the year 2000, Leah Rabin died at 72. She was the widow of the late Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. She died of cancer. Was buried in Mount Herzl Military Cemetery in Jerusalem next to her husband. November 26, 2000, an international inquiry into the Al-Aqsa Intifada begins. Now, one of the results of the Sharm al-Sheikh summit was the agreement to set up a committee to look into the violence. The International Committee of Inquiry into the Al-Aqsa Intifada began its work in New York on November 26, 2000. Former U.S. Senator George Mitchell is the chairman of this fact-finding group. It was often called the Mitchell Committee from that point on. That brings the year 2000 to a close. Let's move on to the year 2001 and take a look at the significant events that happened in this very, very tumultuous year. The year 2001 and 2002 have been very, very significant years in the life of the modern state of Israel. A tremendous number of events have happened. So we'll try to go through the key ones one by one. Let's begin on February 6th of 2001 with the election of Ariel Sharon as Israel's next prime minister. He was elected the 11th prime minister in a landslide vote over Labor candidate Ehud Barak. Now, Ariel Sharon is very nationalist in outlook. He's a former general and defense minister. And in his swearing-in ceremony, he stated that he was prepared for peace but would insist on a reduction in violence before resuming negotiations. He took the oath of office with his hand on a Hebrew Old Testament, and this is a first, the very first time an Israeli prime minister has ever done this. And his aide said the gesture symbolically reaffirmed the Jewish connection to the Holy Land. In March, the next month, he asserted his goal to increase Aliyah. His goal by 2020 is that most of the Jewish nation would be gathered in the state of Israel by 2020. That was what he would hope to see. Now, in March, the Knesset also returned to the parliamentary system. Back in 1996, the Knesset electoral system consisted of separate ballots for prime minister and a separate ballot for the party. Now, that was put in place in 1996. That was repealed on March 7, 2001. Also in March, the European Union stated that it would begin to monitor PA funds. The European Union representative stated that they plan to closely monitor funds transferred to the Palestinian Authority in order to ensure that they do not end up in Yasser Arafat's pockets. And so this, they're concerned about financial abuse of this money, and this concern is well-founded. For example, in May 5th of the year 2002, approximately a year from now, the Israel would release a 91-page report titled The Arafat File. And that report demonstrated that Yasser Arafat and the top PA officials were directly involved in financing terror attacks. And the money provided to the PA by donor states, such as the European Union and the USA, was allocated to finance terror and incitement. In addition, tens of millions of dollars were used to pay terrorists. In an interesting article on June 7th in the year 2002, about a year and a half from now, the Kuwaiti daily Al-Watan, this daily newspaper, published the fact that they had received documents from private sources which documented Yasser Arafat depositing in his own name $5.1 million into a personal account. And the Kuwaiti daily Al-Watan called the transfer a theft on Arafat depositing $5.1 million into his personal account for personal expenses and for the upkeep of his family. It was considered a theft by this Kuwaiti newspaper. You see, Arafat and his wife and daughter live in Paris and in Switzerland. They don't live in the Palestinian Authority, and Arafat visits them on regularly. That's why the money was sent to them. March 29th. March was a very important month in 2001. It was on March 29th, at the very end of the month, that the IDF opened up an offensive against Force 17. Three successful terrorist bombing attacks struck Israel late in March. So following the wave of terrorism, the government convened an emergency security cabinet meeting. And during the meeting, it was decided to undertake a consistent, protracted campaign against terrorists, against their accomplices, and against their commanders. No longer would Israel move just in relation to incidents, but would become more aggressive. Prime Minister Sharon stated, "The days of restraint are over." So IDF helicopter gunships attacked five targets of Force 17. Force 17 is Yasser Arafat's presidential guard. The Force 17 targets hit one in Ramallah and four in Gaza. Now, the attacks were driven by neither punishment, the idea of punishment, nor the idea of revenge, but by the right of Israel for self-defense. That was the philosophy behind the attack. So the attacks were Prime Minister Sharon's first military response since he took office 3 weeks earlier. Hatzofeh, an Israeli right-wing newspaper, commented, and I quote, "Prime Minister Ariel Sharon was elected in order to put a stop to the shedding of Israeli citizens' blood, which his predecessor failed to do. No benefit will accrue to Israel for showing restraint, because the Arab world sees this as weakness." And so that's the understanding that Ariel Sharon very clearly has in mind. He knows that the Arab world sees any kind of restraint or compromise as weakness. And he knows the Arab mind, and so now he's beginning to step out with these preemptive strikes, these self-defensive strikes. Let's move on to May. May 14th, the year 2001, Israel Independence Day. Israel celebrated its 53rd Independence Day in 2001. Israel's Jewish population is 5.2 million people, and that comprises 38% of the world Jewish population. Now, on Independence Day of 2001, Israel had 6.2 million residents. That's 8 times more than the population of the country in 1948. That's an astounding increase. In the previous year, the population grew by 152,000 people. Now, on August 14th of 2001, Prime Minister Peres will state that there were 4.2 million Arabs west of the Jordan River. Well, let's do some math here. You have 6.2 million total population. You subtract 5.2 million Jewish people, and that leaves 1 million Israeli Arabs. That would be 1 million Arabs who are Israelis. Now, Prime Minister Peres said there were 4.2 million Arabs west of the Jordan River. So 4.2 million minus 1 million Israeli Arabs, 4.2 million Arabs in general, minus 1 million Israeli Arabs equals 3.2 million Palestinian Arabs in the West Bank and Gaza. That's a very significant number of people to be dealing with, and this is why the Middle East situation is so difficult. There is, what do you do with a population of 3.2 million people who insist that they don't want to be governed by you and insist upon their own land? That's the struggle that the nation of Israel is dealing with. A very significant event happened on April 24, 2001. The Kinneret hits its lowest level ever. On April 24th, the lake, the Sea of Galilee, the Kinneret, was at the red line, minus 213 meters below the normal level. If the water drops 3 more meters to a minus 216 meters below the normal level, then Israel's water supply would be endangered, and the lake could suffer irreparable ecological damage. At present, water can only be supplied from natural resources, and these have become seriously depleted after 3 consecutive winters of drought. So a very, very significant event on April 24th, the Kinneret was the lowest ever recorded in modern Israeli history. Let's move on to May 4th of 2001. Into the month of May, May 4th. On May 4th, the Sharm el-Sheikh Fact-Finding Committee, also known as the Mitchell Committee, issued its report regarding the cause of the Al-Aqsa Intifada. The report concluded that the violence was caused by 2 factors. Factor number 1, divergent expectations. The government of Israel expects, this is the first expectation, the government of Israel expects that the Oslo process will proceed in a nonviolent atmosphere consistent with the agreements signed between the parties. But the PLO expected a faster implementation of the Oslo Accords. So there's your 2 divergent expectations. 1, in a peaceful atmosphere. 2, very quickly. Secondly, the second reason is divergent perspectives. Each side views the other as acting in bad faith and claims that the other side has failed to comply with the agreements. So divergent expectations and divergent perspectives. The basic recommendations of the report were, number 1, a cessation of violence. Number 2, a resumption of security cooperation between the sides. Thirdly, to rebuild confidence, and to rebuild confidence through a number of means. Number 1, the PA must take all measures necessary to stop terrorist operations. Secondly, the PA must arrest and jail all terrorists operating within its jurisdiction. Thirdly, the government of Israel must freeze all settlement construction. Fourthly, both sides must implement a cooling-off period. Fifthly, both sides must reduce tensions and prevent violent demonstrations. Sixthly, both sides must discipline their actions and responses. Seventh, both sides must foster understanding and tolerance and abstain from incitement. 8, both sides must minimize the economic and social impact of the violence. 9, both sides must respect the holy places. And 10, there will be no international protection force introduced into the area unless both sides support it. And that was the confidence-building measures. And finally, the 4th major recommendation is to resume negotiations. So that was the 4 basic recommendations. Cease the violence, resume security cooperation, rebuild confidence through a number of means, and then fourthly, resume negotiations. The Palestinians accepted the report and declared that they wanted to use it as a basis to reconvene the American-led Sharm el-Sheikh talks. In addition, they stated that they were ready for an immediate ceasefire based on the principles laid down in the report. Israel likewise gave the okay to the Mitchell Report with two reservations. Number one, the demand for an absolute settlement freeze, they were reserved on that, and two, criticism of IDF operations. Now, the United States endorsed the report and it urged both sides to cease violence immediately as a first step toward restoring trust. In response, on May 23, 2001, Prime Minister Ariel Sharon halted. He halted all IDF preemptive strikes against the PA, and he says he will maintain the ceasefire except in cases of genuine danger to human life. And he urged the Palestinian Authority also to agree to an immediate ceasefire. However, the PA continued to carry out acts of terrorism and violence with greater intensity. Violation of recommendation number one, which is the cessation of violence. Now, from May 23rd, when the Israeli ceasefire was ordered, until May 29th, just 1 week, there were 96 terrorist attacks. So it doesn't seem like the PA accepted the report, does it? 96 terrorist attacks. Ariel Sharon presented to the PA an immediate implementation plan of the Mitchell Committee recommendations. They said, we would like to do that immediately. The government of Israel warned the PA that if terrorist attacks continue, they would set aside the policy of restraint that had been exercised in the past week. Now, the Israeli plan included a detailed timetable of the steps recommended for in the Mitchell report. As the plan progressed, Israel would start implementing existing Oslo II and Y accords. Israel would also carry out the third phase withdrawal mandated by the interim accords. See, the withdrawal had not been carried out because of the failure of the Camp David meetings. In exchange, Israel expected the PA to arrest terrorists, to collect illegal firearms, and to end incitements. 11 days, now we're now 11 days away, 11 days after the unilateral ceasefire called by Israel, a terrorist blew himself up among the crowd waiting to enter the Dolphinarium nightclub in Tel Aviv. 18 young people were killed, 120 were injured. It was the worst attack in 5 years. And notice, this was only 11 days after the Palestinians said that they had accepted the Mitchell Report. Israel then declared that its ceasefire was no longer in effect and that the army would enter Palestinian Area A if and when it deemed necessary. However, Israel held back any military action following a declaration by Yasser Arafat that he would do his utmost to bring about a ceasefire with Israel. However, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and other paramilitary organizations declared that they would ignore the ceasefire and continue to attack Israel. In addition, Arafat rejected Israeli demands to rearrest Islamic terrorists. You see, he had arrested many, but then had released them under a revolving door arrest policy. The day after the attack, Israeli mobs attacked the Hassan Beik Mosque and an Arab-owned bakery in Tel Aviv. In response, the Arabs in Jaffa hurled rocks onto Israeli traffic on Yafet Street in Jaffa. The Minister of Arab Affairs expressed sorrow that sectors of the Israeli populace had turned on Israeli Arabs. He added that Israeli Arabs condemned the attack and are in the same boat as the rest of the citizens of Israel. And the final result was that the city of Tel Aviv decided to pay for the repairs on the mosque. So the area in 2000, in the middle of 2001, was very, very, very tense. Let's move to June 6th, 2001, the beginning of June. The so-called ceasefire that had been called was more or less holding, and so President Bush sent CIA Director George Tenet to the region to mediate a round of security talks. The focus of Director Tenet's visit will be the unwillingness of the PA to arrest terrorists. The government of Israel had given the PA a list of 34 Hamas and Islamic Jihad activists that it wanted arrested. The PA retorted that the arrest of Palestinian activists, note, they don't call them terrorists, the arrest of Palestinian activists is unequivocally unacceptable. Now, Israel had already begun to implement a settlement freeze by not approving additional construction of the settlements and by ordering the IDF to dismantle all new outposts set up by settlers. However, the PA said that the freeze formula worked out with the American government was a trick. On June 12, 2001, in the middle of June, Prime Minister Sharon accepted the ceasefire security plan put forward by CIA Director Tenet. Yasser Arafat gave reluctant approval to the Tenet plan only after Director Tenet threatened to leave the region. And so violence and terrorism continued. Now, Israel has attempted now to implement the Mitchell Report. They issued a unilateral statement to end the violence, a unilateral ceasefire, and they began to work on their confidence rebuilding recommendations by freezing settlement construction. So Israel has taken the first few steps to implement the Mitchell Accord. That was in June, but in the next month, in July, on July 18th, the very first mortar shells fall on Jerusalem. Early in May, back early in May of 2001, a Lebanese boat carrying a massive arms shipment to Gaza was apprehended. The crew members admitted that they had made two successful deliveries earlier. And so IDF sources told reporters that the probability was high that there were mortars in Palestinian hands in the West Bank as well as Gaza. So in May, early in May, mortar fire was coming from Palestinian-controlled areas of the Gaza Strip. And mostly unnoticed and largely unmentioned by the rest of the world was the fact that the IDF was undertaking raids into PA territory in response to this mortar fire. On July 18, 2001, the IDF concern proved well-founded, and the Palestinians fired their first mortar shells on Jerusalem. Let's move to the next month, August. The very first of August, 2001, Israel strikes out against Hamas. Israel took its program of targeted killings directly to Hamas in August when it killed two prominent Hamas leaders in Nablus. Yamal Mansour and Yamal Salim died when an Israeli helicopter gunship sent two rockets into their third-floor office. They were the most senior activists killed by Israel in the past 10 months. They were ardent proponents of suicide bombing attacks on Israel. Now, the spiritual leader of Hamas is Sheikh Ahmed Yassin. He promised revenge for the attack. Israel was heavily criticized by the United States and replied that the government of Israel has an obligation to protect its citizens and is operating in self-defense. Since the PA allows the suicide bombers to operate freely in its territory, Israel has no choice but to strike at them before they act. Now, 5 days later, in an unprecedented move, Israel published its list of terrorists, including the seven most wanted men. Now, Israel had repeatedly requested that the PA arrest these specific terrorists. An Israeli radio commentator commented on the list, quote, "If the Palestinian Authority does not round them up, it's clear what their fate will be." And the PA rejected Israel's demand to arrest the seven most wanted terrorists. By August 12, 2001, the PA had released from detention three Hamas terrorists involved in the Tel Aviv Dolphinarium attack, as well as other attacks. So this is just part of Yasser Arafat's revolving door policy for jailing terrorists. The PA security services refrained from questioning the three. They held them under lax supervision and in comfortable circumstances and then released them. August 27, 2001, Israel strikes against the PFLP. Israeli helicopters fired rockets at a building in PA-ruled Ramallah, killing the leader of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, the PFLP. The victim was Abu Ali Mustafa, He was the highest-ranking PA official killed by Israel in the past 11 months. He was one of the top five figures in the PLO. Israel defended her actions on the basis of self-defense. The PFLP was responsible for dozens of terrorist attacks against Israelis. Mustafa was involved in preparing additional terrorist attacks against Israel. Now, Mustafa had returned to the Palestinian territories from exile in 1999. Now, Israel had allowed him to return on the condition that he renounce terrorist activity and embrace the peace process. The PA guaranteed they would restrain his activities, which, of course, that did not happen. The United States sharply condemned Israel for Mustafa's death, but a very significant event would happen in just 1 month that would change the United States' position very significantly. On September 10, 2001, Israel experienced its first Israeli Arab suicide bomber. Up till then, suicide bombers had not been citizens of Israel. And now, on September 11, 2001, Islamic terrorists attacked New York and Washington, D.C. This attack on America would change forever the shape of the events in the Middle East. The United States would finally come to understand exactly what Israel was dealing with. Israel observed a national day of mourning in solidarity with the U.S. after the deadly terrorist attack against the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. In contrast, approximately 4,000 Palestinians took to the streets in Nablus to celebrate the attacks. Now, realizing that the celebrations would shock the world, the PA police quelled the celebrations and confiscated videotape of the cameraman who filmed it. Yasser Arafat's Tanzim militiamen threatened the life of a Palestinian cameraman who worked for the Associated Press. They told him if the footage was shown, he would die. The Foreign Press Association sharply criticized the PA for suppressing the videotape of Palestinian celebrations in Nablus. There was also celebrations by Hamas members in Gaza City, Ramallah, and Jericho. Now, the effect of the attacks on the Arab world was the generation of conspiracy theories. Conspiracy theories would rush rampant through the Arab world, and they would say that Israel was behind the attack. This is inconsistent with the Arab position that everything is Israel's fault. Various rumors ran wild, such as number one. Probably the most prominent rumor was that 4,000 Jews who worked in the Trade Center were mysteriously absent on September 11th. These 4,000 Jewish people apparently got the word through the mysterious Jewish grapevine and, of course, just weren't there and so lived through the attack. But in response to that rumor, I'd like you to consider the experience of Mark Sokolow. Mark Sokolow was working on the 38th floor of the South Tower on September 11th. His office was evacuated, and he escaped unharmed before the second plane hit the North Tower. Nobody ever told him to stay home from work that day. He was conspicuously present. Now, ironically, on January 27, 2002, just a few months later, he and his wife Rina and their daughters were shopping in Jerusalem and suffered minor injuries from a nearby suicide bomber. Now, in contrast, September11news.com reported that not a single Saudi lost their life in the Trade Center towers. If absence of individuals is an indicator of guilt, then it would appear to me that the absence of Saudis in the Trade Center towers would point more toward Saudi Arabia than Israel, considering that a number of Saudis took part in the attack. But that's hardly a proof of guilt. Knowing that a number of the hijackers are Saudis is not to say that the Saudi Arabian government planned the attack. Second key rumor, another key rumor that floated around, was the statement that five Jewish people were arrested after being spotted videotaping the attack and dancing in celebration. Now, the Syria Times named Ariel Sharon as the brains behind the attack. That's another rumor that went around. A fourth statement that was circulated in the Gulf News. The Gulf News is a daily newspaper in the United Arab Emirates. And the Gulf News reported Salim Abu Sultan, a Palestinian diplomat, stating, quote, "I can smell Israeli fingers behind this. The scope of the attack was beyond the capability of Arabs. Only Israelis have the ability to do such things. So we Arabs are too stupid to do this," was his report there. Many Muslims blamed Israel's spy agency, the Mossad. Now, on September 18th, 2001, yielding to diplomatic pressure, Arafat ordered his forces to halt all violence directed at Israeli targets. Israel responded by halting military strikes, by withdrawing several tank positions, and by halting the targeted killing of terrorists. The PA stated that they were working hard to make the truce stick. Hamas stated that they would be willing to suspend attacks inside Israel unless provoked. The Israelis, of course, were justifiably skeptical of Arafat's intentions. Spokesman Dore Gold stated, quote, "In the past, his ceasefires have had the shelf life of roughly 1 week." However, by September 24th, a mere 6 days after Arafat had ordered his ceasefire, 99 terrorist attacks had occurred. September 24th. 6 days after Arafat had ordered his ceasefire, 99 attacks had occurred. Hardly seems like a ceasefire, does it? Let's move on to November. November 11th, 2001. President Bush addresses the UN. As he did, he outlined his vision of a Palestinian state before the UN General Assembly, and he called for an end to the violence. However, he said he would not meet with Yasser Arafat. October 17th, 2001, Cabinet Minister Rahavam Zvi is assassinated. The PFLP claimed responsibility for the Minister of Tourism. It was the first assassination of a cabinet minister in the State of Israel's 53-year history. The PFLP said it was in retaliation for Israel's assassination of PFLP leader Abu Ali Mustafa. Now, Zvi, the Minister of Tourism, was one of the most controversial figures in the Israeli Knesset. He advocated a policy of transfer, in other words, a policy of expulsion of Arabs from Israel and from the PA territories. That would be about 3 million Arabs, as we've saw earlier. That's a pretty radical position to take. What are you going to do with 3 million people? Well, senior police officials uncovered the identities of the terrorists and those who sent them, and their names were given to the PA. Israel held Yasser Arafat responsible and demanded the extradition of those responsible for the killing. If the PA fails to do so, Israel will consider it a terrorist entity and retaliate appropriately. Despite the Oslo Accords, not a single Palestinian terrorist has ever been extradited to Israel. Well, the PA went condemned the assassination, but Israel said words were not enough. Prime Minister Sharon gave Arafat 1 week, the end of the Jewish period of mourning to crack down on militants. The PA responded that it didn't take orders from Israel. The PA rejected the demand for extradition, calling it blackmail, and stated that they were hunting the killers. When the ultimatum period ran out, Israel stated that it would operate on the principle of self-defense and enter PA territory to apprehend terrorists and to stop terrorist activities. Israel does not intend to remain in the PA territory, but will remain if counterterrorism action is not taken by the PA. Israel stated that it was willing to negotiate on the basis of the Mitchell Report only when the PA, number one, stops terrorism and incitement, number two, arrests terrorists, outlaws terrorist organizations, and three, extradites the killers of cabinet member Rahavam Zvi. November 26, 2001, General Zinni arrives in Israel. Retired U.S. Marine General, Anthony Zinni arrived in Israel in an attempt to mediate a ceasefire. He unsuccessfully attempted to prod Mr. Arafat into initiating a meaningful crackdown against Hamas and Islamic Jihad. General Zinni gave Arafat a list of 30 Palestinian extremists to arrest. The PA picked up only 12 of those men. And of those 12, only a few were actually placed under real arrest. After three fruitless weeks, General Zinni was recalled because Palestinian terror attacks continued unabated. Of course, remember, this is in spite of the fact that Arafat is saying he will control the problem. On December 31st, 2001, the very end of the year, December 13th, 2001, in the middle of the last month of the year, Israel severs ties with Arafat, calling him irrelevant. In an emergency meeting following a deadly terror attack near the Emmanuel settlement, the cabinet declared PA Chairman Yasser Arafat no longer relevant. The cabinet approved military operations against the terror infrastructure in the West Bank and Gaza. Yasser Arafat will not be harmed, and every effort will be made to avoid injury to Palestinian civilians. Water, food, electricity, and fuel will continue to be supplied. Israel feels that the Oslo Accords are still in effect, but that Arafat is not fulfilling the terms of the agreements to fight terror. That seems pretty obvious. Accordingly, Israeli tanks stationed themselves 200 yards from Arafat's headquarters in Ramallah and trapped him in the facility. The IDF also toppled the Voice of Palestine radio antenna. And again, notice, Israel goes after terrorists and wanted men and infrastructure. They do not go after the civilian population. The PA called Israel's actions a declaration of war against the Palestinian Authority, but Israel has never declared war on the Palestinian people. Its actions have always been based on self-defense. Israel is fed up because this is the ninth ceasefire initiative embraced by Mr. Arafat that has failed, and has failed because of Mr. Arafat's lack of enforcement. U.S. President Bush bluntly assailed Arafat for failing to end the violence, and this was a distinct change. Up to this point, President Bush called for both sides to end the violence, but now the focus of responsibility was shifted squarely onto the shoulders of Yasser Arafat. This is because the United States and President Bush were suddenly realizing what you're dealing with when you're dealing with the terrorists, and this is the direct cause of the September 11th attack. Now, in response, Yasser Arafat called for a complete cessation of armed attacks and military activities. His remarks were aimed at Islamic Jihad and the PFLP. Arafat stated that he had reached an agreement with Hamas to suspend the suicide and mortar attacks. Now, Israel, who wants results, not words, found that nothing had changed. Even though he made his remarks against Islamic Jihad and the PLFP, PFLP, and said that he had an agreement with Hamas, statistics revealed that the attacks only dropped from 18 a day to 11 per day. Not very significant. From 18 a day to 11 per day. Accordingly, Israel kept Arafat penned up in his Ramallah office, refusing to allow him to attend Christmas Eve services in Bethlehem. Few Arab leaders offered Arafat support. Israel stated that his confinement would end if he became a constructive partner for peace. Israel insisted he must arrest the assassins of Rehavam Zvi. December 31st, 2001, the very last day of the year. As 2001 drew to a close, the Israeli police determined that it had been the most difficult year with regard to security since Israel had become a state in 1948. The Minister of Foreign Affairs, Shimon Peres, would also comment that 2001 was the most trying time Israel has faced since its statehood 53 years ago. In addition, immigration statistics were down as well. Aliyah had dropped nearly 28% in 2001. The drop in immigration was attributed to the economic situation and the security situation. But despite that drop of 28%, nearly 43,477 Jewish people made Aliyah in the year 2001. Well, our time for this class is rapidly coming to a close. Let's bring the class to a close as we close out the year 2001, and we'll pick up our study of the First Regathering Modern Israel with the year 2002 in our next lesson.
Thank you, Pastor Bob. It's our aim at Hadavar Messianic Ministries to deepen your understanding of God's Word and to better equip you to share the Messiahship of Jesus with your Jewish friends, relatives, co-workers, and neighbors. To order additional tapes or for more information, you can contact Hadavar Messianic Ministries at hadavar@hadavar.org. That's H-A-D-A-V-A-R at hadavar.org. Or write to Hadavar Messianic Ministries at 14804 Sand Canyon Avenue, Irvine, California, 92618. Or simply call us at 949-559-1701. Again, that number is 949-559-1701. Again, thanks for listening to this audio presentation of the First Regathering Modern Israel, brought to you by Hadavar Messianic Ministries. If you're listening to this class on audio tape, please turn the tape over to begin the next lesson. If you're listening to this class on CD, the next lesson will begin in a moment.